Welcome to the Social Fabric podcast with me, Andrea Splendori, and this week my guest is Helen Holt. Helen has a business called the Avondale Retreat, and we talk about the importance of reconnecting with nature, rewilding, and living a more natural lifestyle. The music in this podcast has been shortened for rights reason. Please subscribe, share, and review. It's the only way podcasts like this have a chance to survive. The title tune is Happy and Shining by The Round About Us. I paint the colors of the words you say. And bear in mind you have never given up the goal.
What comes out before we actually start?
Could be where the juice is, eh?
That's exactly where it normally is, yeah. So, how are things with you?
Great, yeah, really good. How are you?
Wonderful. I was just listening to Rise, Sisters, Rise by your friend. Is it Jenny Nee Russell?
Jenny Nee Russell, yeah. Yeah,
very nice. Yeah, very nice song.
Really, really powerful one, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's lovely. And I like the video where she has, she plays all the instruments.
She's so talented. She plays so many instruments, and we've heard that song live so many times in Circle and everything. So it's really powerful. She's a beautiful voice, and she uses a lot of the harmonium, a lot of that kind of really ancient sound. She brings it through. She's got a lot of placements in Scorpio, so she brings one to the deck.
Scorpio, we're going to talk a bit about that in a minute. So, Helen, we don't really know each other. I think we bumped into each other once, if I remember correctly, with Veronica and someone else on one Sunday afternoon. You guys were having some healthy food somewhere along the way, and I just stopped to say hello.
I think that's the only time I've actually seen you in person. But yeah, I just wanted to say that, I really appreciate the generous and compassionate, kind-hearted, open way that you're listening to so many people. It's really powerful that you have this open heart and generously receiving so many people's words. So it seems like a practice you've honed.
Yeah, and thanks a million for that. It's very enriching, you know, very empowering. And I always say, I think it'd be nice if everybody did a little bit more of it. You know, there's not that much we need to do, just listen a little bit, which is the key to communication, and it's the key to so many other things. But when, you know, the human nature, we like to know, we like to let people know how much we know, you know, that's what we tend to, that's our default. But I learned in my old age that there's so much more to learn. And one beautiful realization has been that I'm never going to learn everything I want to learn. So that's beautiful, because now I know I have to relax and go, okay, just learn what I can. And, this is...
I love that. That's a really true statement. And I've been contemplating that one for a while, actually, because... Yes, stuff that I was tuning into before even speaking to you, it's like that relationship with the plants, isn't it? And knowing the land here and the ones that I communicate with, and say like the nettle, I know very well, St. John's wort, I know well, and I've built a relationship with them. But not all of the plants are my allies, and I don't have to know, you know, the way you have these massive thick encyclopedia of herbs. And sometimes we think, you know, do I need to know more? Do I know enough about these plants? But really, we only need so many connections to heal ourselves. They don't all have to be our best friends, I suppose. We don't have to know every single plant. And I suppose this idea of, am I learning enough? Do I know enough? Do I have enough to share? It comes from probably a scarcity kind of state, you know, and it's more, wow, this Anantog, say the Irish for it, nettle is really my ally right now. It's really speaking to me and helping me. And just some of the other plants, that are really communicating with me. They're my friends right now, you know, and that's all I need to know. To build this deeper relationship with one plant can be so enriching. So yeah, it's not like we need to learn everything about every single plant that's available in the universe. It's kind of that thing, isn't it? Absolutely. That we don't have to know it all.
Absolutely. And tell me, where is that relationship with plants come from? When did it start?
Well, I think it's a timeless, ancient, very, very old relationship, an ancestral one that's deep in my bones, but also within my lineage and from my grandmother. And it's taken a lot of unlearning and undoing, I suppose, to reestablish and reconstitute this connection with the plants. And now it's an altered relationship. And yeah, I mean, our kitchen is laden with herbs, and we drink them into us all day, every day. You know, we turn the life of the plant into us. And I suppose I could tell you a story about how one of the deeper kind of that reconstitution of the wisdom of the plant came through and came to me as part of my cellular reconnection with it. So yeah, I had received a cutting and a transplant of comfrey. I don't know if you've ever heard of comfrey, but it's also called bone knit, and it stops blood flow. And I connected with many of the other indigenous plants, like the yarrow and I'm looking at the land here, and nettle would be a big one for me, and plantain and dandelion. But with the bone knit, it was an extraordinary experience. I had tended to the soil, had placed her in, I'd watched her grow these beautiful flowers that I'd never seen before. And she just appeared in all this magic. And a few weeks later, I got a huge, from a glass candle slit right across my palm that was gushing blood. I actually have a new palm line. And in the moment of it happening, my husband was here, and it was complete shock of the amount of blood. And immediately I thought, comfrey, you know, get the comfrey from outside. And we went and I couldn't do anything, but I just placed some tea towel on it. And he went out and smashed it up and placed it on. And within days, I mean, I had all these thoughts come up about, I need to go and get it stitched. I need to go and go to the hospital, you know, because it was that deep a gash. And yeah, the reality was that there was the plant that I needed right in the garden. So that wasn't that long ago. And that really taught me, you know, the plants that are right there are the ones that we truly need. And I think, yeah, my children they understand that, like, everything that we need to heal is at home, is in the kitchen, is on the land. So
That's lovely. So just the poultice comfrey, place it on the hand. And when you were talking there, I was listening and I was thinking of my granny and my mom and all of the things that they used to have in the kitchen all the time that I didn't really care about, to be honest, at the time. But I know that there was, you know, there was licorice and there was, clay for when we had teenage acne. That was the thing. You went around with a face covered in clay from the downstairs. It wasn't, we didn't buy anything. It was just dug out of the ground and that was put on the face to help the acne. And you mentioned dandelions, which was a staple diet for us in Rome. We call it chicoria, but it's dandelion.
Yes.
And we cook in
all lion's mane
ways. Yeah, lion's mane. No? But that's fabulous. But what I'm thinking while you're saying it, and I know some of the plants you mentioned, of course, nettles, you find a plenty, but not every plant is out there, right? And I know a lot of them are called weeds, and I always have this thing, they're not weeds, it's just a different plant. You know, you don't like them and you call them weeds, but you know, they have a place and they're doing something, I'm sure. But what that scarcity, how do you deal with this scarcity of things that you might need, that you might want?
Well, great question. Thanks for asking that. I mean, I think we can trace it back to our childhood, but we can trace it back way further than that. Like, especially in Ireland, like, we have been severed from the land. We've been cut off, really, and we've been colonized. And it's not just the plants, but it's the language. And, you know, there's been a lot of separation trauma, I suppose, from our indigenous ways. And that disconnection, it kind of plays out and is seen in how we relate to what's around us. And I mean, it's no wonder that so many of us are disassociated in our bodies, because we've had that severance happen. And even for myself, I feel that it's our heritage and it's our ancestry to really get to know what's on the land, like to know that the land has a heart and it has a personality. And that personality is always a part of you, and it's supporting you in that way. And yeah, I feel kind of a charge in my body, even when I think about how separated we have been. And it's not that we don't mourn or make amends for that, but I suppose, yeah, how, like, when we think about how we go, we spend an hour in nature, we go to the park, or we go to the water, we go for a splash in the sea, and we think we'll soak up some sun and, you know, have a cold water plunge. And that's how, that's true. That's not to discredit or not add value to that. But I suppose, like, how can we go outside our door and know that the trees are really observing us, like, and know us and know our rhythm, like know our footfall. They're, as soon as I stand outside and I notice that the trees are noticing me and, yeah, feeling me and feeling what I need. And it's, I suppose it's intentional, but it's also a way that I go out now. And if I sit with the tree, you know, my spinal fluid and my vertebrae connected to the spine of the tree. And I suppose it's not that it's different. It's just that it's, yeah, it's a knowing that the embodiment of the tree, of this interstitial, you know, fertile exchange that happens when I step outside. And even that ancient song of the birds, like that melody has been through the earth and is being sung through their song lines. And the birds are not just like singing their chorus in the morning. It's like, if I go out there, they're singing for me, you know, they're, oh, here comes Helen. She's out here now, you know, they feel me and they feel my presence. And in that way, I suppose there's a lot of talk now about reciprocity in nature and making an offering, but it's just knowing that we're observed and we're received by nature. And in, I think just that re-tying together and, you know, knowing that everything is animate. So there's, I believe anyway that everything is alive and everything feels. Like a stone might feel in a different chaotic way than a molecule of water, but they're still sentient and they're still feeling me. So yeah, for me, it's an unraveling of a huge severance from the land and from the land of our bodies. And yeah, I mean, my own father is English, and for a lot of my life, I would have suppressed the idea that there was Englishness in me, you know, that my Scottish ancestors and my English ancestors, my Scandinavians, like I shut that down and buried that. And yeah, I suppose wanted to be on this land and to be Irish. And by not allowing that part of me that's in me, those ancestors that are in me, I would have just more, it would have just been more shame, you know, more suppression of who I am. And I think the more that we're kind of piecing back together these remembrances of the land speaking to us, and yeah, the land and the plants, like it's say thousands of years ago when they were discovering mushrooms or ayahuasca or in the jungle communicating with plants, the plants were actually, it's not like they had to do tons of thousands of years of research. The plants told them, you know, and I think when you have this experience and you trace back even to your childhood, we don't have to go into an ancestral connection. You can just go back to a moment that you connected very, very deeply. And I mean, the trees don't tell stories through language. They will communicate in a whole different way and will be given a message. And I think the message that I so regularly get now when I sit with the cedar or with the oak or with the birch even, or I'm calling them by their indigenous names, like on Fuinseog, on Darach. And it's, you belong. Like you're part of this, like your inhale, your microbiome and your contribution to us here is really important. When you inhale, you know, there's a thank you. It's not even like we have to go out and leave these elaborate offerings or do this detailed work. It's simply maybe just saying, you know, thank you to the oak on Darach. Thank you for letting me sit with my back so comfortably in your bark and feel the movement in my spine. So I really, yeah, I feel very strongly, I suppose, and my children are, I'm not sending them to school. Like I'm sending them to a forest. A few days a week, they go to a forest for hours on end. And because for me, this going into the forest with these towering trees and this aliveness and this interspecies network and the communication that's happening that I see firsthand for them and where it's really embodied by them is through awe, is through like bowing down and being brought to their knees by beauty, like the movement in the swaying of the trees, the falling of the leaves, the sunlight through the trees. And when I get to witness how they're receiving the plants, I really feel like something is being rewired. Like the consciousness of the tree wants to rewire us back into that ancient connection that we all had. And at some point and in our ancestry, the plants did tell them what they needed and gave them what they needed. And so that's why, yeah, I have so much I could say about this. I mean, with my children being in forest school, like what I feel is so important about it is like they know where north and south is. They like in school at the moment, like what are they being taught, you know, and how do they know whether they can build a campfire, whether it's safe to drink this water, whether they can be at this river, whether it's safe to swim in this river, they can build a fire, they can use flint and steel. And when I see then, like we talked about at the start there, I don't have a connection so much with gorse. I don't know if you know those beautiful yellow flowers. But when I was out recently and we're walking down to the shore, they were picking them and eating them and saying, you know, here, like, have some of this. It tastes really coconutty. And I was just like, you're eating the gorse, you know, and their new relationship that they're building, it just blows my mind. So yeah, maybe at first speaking about it, it might feel like you asked the question, you know, how do we do that though with the plants? And I think it's probably not, it's a long, you know, reestablishing the communication between the natural world and us. But I think it comes from recognizing the aliveness that's there. Wonderful. Yeah, that's a very long answer, isn't it?
That's quite all right.
You couldn't even
that's
get a word in there.
That's quite right. I have a couple of questions in a minute, but let's play your first song. You gave me three songs. Which one will you start with?
Oh, maybe shall we start with... well, you see, they're all so deeply different, aren't they? I mean, whichever one you feel, certainly...
Let's go with Songbird by Eva Cassidy, because you mentioned Songbird. So let's go with that. Why did you pick that song?
Okay, well, I suppose it's kind of like those ancient storylines that I'm talking about that the birds bring through. But my husband, he picked this song for our wedding ceremony, and he picked a woman and her sons that he knew well to sing it during the ceremony. And for that reason, that's probably why I picked it, you know, because of that wedding ceremony. But also, yeah, just because of that, that was like, we're together for 23 years. Wow. And yeah, we got married 12 years ago and that song played. And since then, it's brought so much more meaning. It's really, yeah, taken on different shapes and meaning.
Wonderful.
I think it's a beautiful song.
What you were saying about the plants and the trees, and so you mentioned the earth and the plants have a personality, so and that's one thing I want to understand better, but you also mentioned the this, you don't have a relationship with the gorse, for example. So I'm curious about two things. I'm curious about, and the third thing, so I'll ask you three questions in one. You can give me a long answer if you want.
Dude, ask me as many questions as you like. But what was the first, about not having a relationship with?
With the gorse. With the, with,
oh, the gorse. Oh, the gorse. Yes, 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 yeah.
Or any other plant. You might not have a relationship with roses.
That's it. Know. Like that, not all the plants are not all my best friends. Yeah.
Right, right. But let's start with the first one. And you mentioned, personality. And also you mentioned that when you go outside, the trees speak to you, okay? Now, I am very curious, skeptical, and I'm going to play devil's advocate here. And are we really talking about a level of self-awareness that is, you know, heightened for you to be sitting there and really appreciating the beauty of the trees, the beauty of the plant, the beauty of everything that surrounds you, as opposed to the tree actually speaking to you?
Great question. Really good. And definitely something I could contemplate on. And how can I answer this truthfully now? Because I'm all about like wanting to feel the answer and know it in my body and share from that place and that truth. And I suppose I'm going to come back to women. I work a lot with women, obviously, but I work in harmony with my husband as well. And we've studied astrology together for the past few years. So we've gone deep into that journey of teaching together. But women are chronically underrested. And, you know, in this place where we're trying to do everything and be everything for everyone. So, you know, and trying to do and be everything for everyone is this fast track to depletion, really. So that comes to mind when you ask me that question, because when do we really get this depth of solitude, silence, and space to even just contemplate our own thoughts? You know, we're so bombarded all the time. So even just the space to be with the trees and to get to know them. So you're right, I suppose, that not everybody is remembering this indigenous connection for want of that, because of space and time. And at the same time, I kind of feel it's urgent that this level of space and this reconnection happens. So the question then, I suppose, is how, I mean, if that somehow satisfies your answer, I suppose I'm agreeing with you in a way that it does require a lot of time. It requires commitment and deep listening. But it doesn't mean that you have to hear the tree tell you something. You know, it's not that it is in language. It's a receiving of, you know, the feeling body of the land, on Tolov, of of connecting like that in a new way, in an intentional way. It's like not going to the beach because it's good for us and we need to get out for an hour. It's going because that's really healing. The purpose of me going here is to reorder my cellular memory, is to be so fully connected that I don't feel that severance that's been perpetrated. And yeah, so I guess
I get it. And I've been in nature a lot, and I do understand what you're saying. I don't hear the trees speaking to me, but I do find huge amount of solace being in the woods, being in the sea, mm-hmm. being everywhere as near possible as I can be, and listen to those songbirds and trying to, you know, of course, some days you think they're singing for you. Some days you just appreciate the fact that it's a beautiful song and I never heard it before. I wonder what that bird is. I wonder what that flower is and wonder what that smell is. All of these things, which to me is...
Well, that's it.
It's a wonderful way of exploring what's around us.
I think that's exactly it. I think you can, you know, smell your way back into an old story. You can sniff it out. Like it's really potently there that you can kind of reweave those threads. And did you want to say something else there, Andres?
No, it's your podcast. So you'd say whatever.
No, it's absolutely your podcast. I'm a guest of honor. But no, did you want to elaborate on that question?
I just wanted to ask you about the personality. I'm curious about it. So you leave where you are. Your land around you has a certain personality. I'm going to ask you what that personality is. But if I were to transport you into, I don't know, the Midlands, for example, you know, we'll go to Tullamore and along the canal. Is that a different personality? And how do you determine the personality of the land around you?
Oh, another amazing question. You've obviously been doing this for a long time. You're so good with the question. Yes. Absolutely. The land in Dún an Áil, say the land in Antrim, the land in Tullamore is a completely different personality, completely different heart, a whole different, like it could translate through a whole different vibration and a whole different, yeah, absolutely. And it's also the case for me that some parts of Ireland that I go to, I don't feel that deeper sense of belonging. I'm not sitting in Tullamore and the tree is telling me, you know, you really belong here. And I think, yeah, you're so spot on. There's different ancestral lineages that you're connected to. And you can also look at it from astrocartography and where your different lines might run across the country. You might have a Venus line running through Donegal or a Neptune line. And in that way, that will change your relationship to that place. And like I find that's usually very accurate. But then again, you know, I don't feel like I need to go to the lands of Scandinavia or England or the lands of my ancestors to connect with them either, because it's all in our body. It's all here, like the ancestors healed and unhealed and part of our bloodline are all with us and breathing within us. So it's not like we need to travel to different places. And I also agree that, yes, for this land where I'm on, it's a muscle, you know, and it's an organ of perception that it's activated initially, I suppose, and then it's nurtured. And it's not like this big reclamation. It's more like my soul has a very strong recognition of, you could say the she, or you could call it anything. But the ancient ones, and definitely there's real live ancestors buried around here. There's a famine graveyard just across the road with 8,000 people buried in it. There's like 4,000 babies and they're from the famine, you know. And so it's a never ending cycle of reconnection and, you know, of millennia of decomposition on this land, like a decomposing of so much aliveness and so much connection that's built up over the years. So I suppose, yeah, for me, I'm getting that belonging because that's really what the true message is. And I feel very at home here. And yeah, and for anyone listening that doesn't feel like maybe they they belong on a land, or they feel like always that they need to move or be somewhere else, or maybe there's a land calling them somewhere else. You know, maybe there is, and a good thing to do is to look where your astrocartography lies, and yeah, like deeply, intuitively, tuning in to where the sound of the water, if there's been movement of water somewhere that's really connected you. And the other thing that I was going to say about answering that question, when I'm talking about, you know, going to nature and going with the realization that, yes, as you said, there's great solace in going outside and just going in for a dip, but it that sense of healing, and what I'm talking about, that sense of healing, I suppose, like healing, maybe to reframe it, it's like we're not sick or dying or in a place of despair when we go for healing. And I think sometimes with whatever has exploded with this whole new age spirituality and the wellness industry and everything, in a way, I feel a little bit like we're being sold this idea of wellness by the same people that are like selling us like poison and other things. So it's really a key element of discernment at the moment. And yeah, I'd love to just look at healing in a whole different light. And for me, I really go back to birth, and like I birthed both of my daughters on this land. And I mean, that as a metaphor, as a portal, as a description, but just like we're broken open and cracked open, and there's a messiness and there's blood involved. And you know, that whole breaking open, that healing being that has to really happen. It's like we've been encoded with this programming to be afraid of falling apart, but like falling apart is generative, and is the compost is, you know, revitalizing itself. So yeah, I so often come back to that morphology and that idea of birth. And I suppose for me, birth was really that portal and a kind of psychedelic almost experience. And when you ask whether I needed to be meditating or in that space of awareness to connect with nature, I think I really just needed to be broken open, like to be vulnerable in the cracks of when things are falling apart, and when I do think I'm going to die. Because with birth, like, and when that plant came to me and I could say saved my life, you know, and with birth, there is a point at which like there's transition, or a woman thinks I'm going to die. I can't go on. This is like to traverse the point at which like you maybe go to a space outside of time, like an ineffable, invisible cloak of protection from the soul of the baby that's coming in. You go into this kind of psychedelic non-linear space to retrieve the soul and bring that soul through your body. Like what's it like to live inside of that worldview that is completely cracked open? And so, yeah, for me, that was probably one of the most healing and then regenerative kind of things that I would say, yeah, has happened to me. That's made me more connected to my own nature, because yeah, that churning and turning of the plants in and through me, it's the same thing as a new being, you know, it's a cycle. And it doesn't mean that we stay cracked open forever or that we must come back together. But this idea that birth is an emergency, or we're incurable, or we have a disease and we have to live in that state forever, or we're never going to get better, that just for me was just blown wide open, and I suppose kind of, yeah, tipped that power dynamic that's being played out in the world. So there's so much I could say about like why I'm unschooling or not sending them to school, homeschooling, or, you know, home birthing and giving birth on the land, free birthing, whatever these apparently radical terms are. But it's far from radical. You know, it's actually what we've always done. It's a physiological, biological, natural normalcy that's inherent in us. You know, it's what we do actually is break open and decompose and then you know, come back together and heal that way. So I suppose, yeah, you're right. Like reconnecting, as we were saying, to nature. Yeah, probably. Well, then when I think about my first birth, though, you're bringing me all kinds of neuro pathways here, rewiring even in my speaking now. Yeah, even when I was having my first birth, though, I went out and I picked up the eucalyptus and like I inhaled this beautiful eucalyptus tree here and I inhaled the leaves and I used that just intuitively. But even when we moved here, there was a tree surgeon that said, oh, that tree is dead. It needs to be cut down. That's going to fall down and there's nothing on it. You know, he was a tree surgeon. I was like, no, that tree is not going. And now when you come in, it's so remarkable, this huge, really powerfully potent smelling tree that was always alive, you know. But yeah, I hope that answered your question. I don't know if it did.
Absolutely. I have a couple of more, but let's listen to the next song, which is by Nightworks. And I want to even try to pronounce it. I don't even know what it means. So please tell me more about it. And how do you pronounce the title?
I think it's Sorla. It's actually, Nightworks I connected to when I was connecting to my Scottish ancestry. And it's a beautiful, I remember just hearing the words of it's an old man speaking and he has a very thick accent and he's talking about how words like the predominant culture has kind of confiscated certain language and used it and then now how we have another set of language. And I think it's really the etymology and the visceral feeling that are connected to really old words that are now being used, even power or healing or wellness or, you know, self-care or these words that are taking on whole new meanings. And he, as he says in the song, and now we have a different set of words. And I suppose, again, it's like connecting with the tree. It's like what actually on a cellular memory level vibrates with your being. And so that song, for some reason, really hit home with me. And it was probably to do with the burying and hiding away that I have done all my life with the idea of having a bloodline that's English, you know. So it's probably, and he reminded me of that Scottish link that I have. So I really love that song. I really love Nightworks. And do you ever find with music that sometimes you go through a period where it's like, this is very strongly resonating. And then a few years later, you'll be like, why did I love that music so much? I'm not saying that song will be like that, but sometimes you're in a phase where it really lands in your body. And so that was, yeah, the last year or so, it really did. And I find listening to older people and elders just really consoling, or like, I think a lot of us are missing that in our lives. At the moment, we don't always have the elders. We don't have the grandmothers to show us their ways or their witchery that they had. So, yeah, that's why I suppose I'm still speaking at all, because, as a Scorpio rising, I'd quite like to like do this whole homesteading life and this just tending to the land and being with my family and being kind of close knit and private. And at the same time, if we're not telling the stories, how are we going to hear the what's coming through? So yeah, thanks for listening.
No, and that's what this podcast is all about. It's about stories, about people, and it's about listening to each other's stories without any judgment. You know, we all have our own ideas of what the world is all about. You mentioned ancestry a lot, and you mentioned cartography, which is a new one to me. And you also, your business as such, what is it, as you call it, a business, or your business is you do retreats, right? You do retreats. And you mentioned women as well. So tell me a bit about what you do, and if people are interested, what are they going to get if they contact you? What's going on?
Well, I suppose what I'm doing and working alongside my husband, I don't really separate so much life from work. I feel like there's kind of a continual thread and a synergy, and like I feel like life itself is kind of the work as such, and parenting especially, and growing food, and you know, everything, that the way that we're living, it's kind of more, there's not that much of a separation between work. It's more of that remembering with the plants and with the all of the species. And working with women, definitely the way I spoke about birth there, that again, that kind of knowing beyond knowing, and that in that ineffable kind of sense that we can connect back to birth. And just questioning, I'm always questioning how, you know, the dominant voices in our culture, and how the overlords or the overculture, how it's asking us to live and to be and to show up. And I probably find that question quite a hard question to answer, because I don't like to really live. I like to live inside this place and not to really separate out work so much. And at the same time, saying that, like nearly 10 years ago, we bought this what which was an orphanage, and it was this old, really old, rundown building. I mean, I'd been a medical negligence solicitor for 11 years, and like chronically burnt out, and overworked really, and so much catastrophic birth injury cases, and like constant turmoil of clients and constant work, and started up in a corporate law firm, and worked as 11 years in that whole legal world, to the point like where I was just completely burnt out, and I was going to the trees in the Phoenix Park and going anywhere that I could. Like I'd run home from work to get to the trees in the Phoenix Park. And then I just got to that point where I was like, I really need to be much more deeply immersed in this. And as you mentioned, Veronica, as well, at the start, like I was teacher training with her maybe 11 or 12 years ago now. And she would have been a really powerful mentor in my life. And meeting her and working in that arena at the time, I've just been constantly bombarded with medical negligence cases and all the trauma that brought up, being steeped in that. And then, we just landed here. David found this place. It was like a strange place, completely dilapidated and run down, with like fungi growing up the walls and dry rock growing everywhere, and having to just... You know, not the auctioneer wouldn't even actually give us the keys to view the place. It had been on the market for years, and he was just like, there's the key, you know, I'm not going in there, as in like it is contaminated. And one foot in the door and just seeing this fireplace and not caring about the rubble. And after it had been an orphanage run by the Sisters of Mercy, it was then taken over by the HSE. And so they had like retreats running here for delinquent boys and things like that. So they had all kinds of like social workers coming through, and psychotherapists and different healing things, funnily enough, were happening here. And then once we came here, I think it probably was Veronica, actually, we were only in a very short time, and she was like, I'll be doing a retreat here now, because it's a huge place, and I'll be doing a retreat here now in a few weeks. I was like, really? You know, it hadn't even really crossed my mind that that's what it would turn into. So, which is why I often scoff at the whole manifesting thing that happens. It's like, wow, the universe just landed this in my lap. This wasn't even something that I asked for. And then once she said that, I was like, yeah, wow. And ever since then, it's been, not that I speak about it negatively, but it's been like a cascade of people coming and returning and like just being like, can I come back? You know, honestly, if Yeah, if we wanted, we could have like 100 people living here. It kind of has this pull and this draw, and it has a womb like energy that just when you enter, it's like a big sucking in of like, yeah, I don't know what you'd call it, maybe just healing. And in a way, I suppose I could say I'm lucky to have landed here, and it's altered me beyond like the way love or I don't know, a vocation or something alters you. It's like, you don't really have a choice, you know, you can't really control it. It's kind of just given to you. And that's what I feel, that we're just custodians or we're just stewards of here. And it's just something that's our purpose that we didn't really ask for. But yeah, then my husband coming into his work with astrology and everything was kind of a real surprise as well, and a very welcome one. He'd gone down the vegan journey with me and all the rest. And yeah, we realized not that well, a few years ago, we realized that was another thing that we'd kind of bought into, but whole other story there. But yeah, so yeah, that's how we landed here. There's no, it's actually a mystery. It's a bit of a mystery.
But tell me what, apart from people, I suppose, hiring the place for their own retreat, you run your own things, right? You run your own.
Well, yeah, we don't hire it at the moment at all, even though I think we get about 3 requests a week. I don't know whether that facility is very lacking in Ireland or what the story is, or whether that pull that I'm talking about is so strong. But at the moment, we don't actually hire it out. And maybe we'll return to that in the future. But yeah, now we just every month, or sometimes twice a month, but we'd have a gathering here. It would call it a circle, and women just come and bring their own medicine and like come and sit in circle. And yeah, women just gather here. And it seems to be a very organic and natural thing that happens. And yeah, I've moved through cycles and seasons of it, but now it just, yeah, we've morphed into it being our way of life. That everyone, like, we'd honor obviously the wheels of the year and the cycles in that way. But yeah, it's incredible that it just, we don't have to actually do anything. It just happens that we're sitting in circle very regularly and going to the water. I mean, I suppose that would be, if I was to talk about some kind of calling or business or some whatever way you might call it, it probably is to go to the water. And that's a huge part of the gatherings that happen. And I can't even use any of the terms that are used now, like rewilding or anything, because I question everything so deeply that I'm like, wow, we were always quite feral. Like, our minds are way more feral and than we lead ourselves to believe. So I've even, yeah, separated myself from the notion of rewilding. But that is, but then again, when you're climbing up a riverbank and it's you're naked trying to get out of the water and you're barefoot running through the forest, I mean, you could call it rewilding for if that's not what you're used to. But
fair enough. So let's play the last song before I ask you the last couple of questions. And this is I was just listening to before we came on online, Rise Sister Rise by your good friend, Jenny Nee Russell. And it's a beautiful song, and she plays all the instruments in it. Tell me a little bit about the song and why you chose it.
Yeah, so Jenny actually lives on the land here as well. And so I hear her playing all the time. And she teaches yoga here, and I hear her and her partner just playing tin whistle and other magical drums and music that just come up from, there's a part, not an underground, but it's like there's a 3-story building, and on the bottom there's a place where I gave birth. We made it into like a birth cave for me to be in there for my second birth. And so she lives in there. And I suppose, how did that song first come about? She sang it in a circle, and I remember just so many women jumping to their feet, like, and stamping, you know, and like really letting it reverberate through them. And however Jenny does it, she really manages to tune into people that are there and just awaken something in them through her voice and through the sound. And yeah, that song is, it's a very beautiful song, and she wrote it herself, and she writes so many gorgeous Irish songs that she seems to, I don't know whether she channels them or she remembers them somehow, but it's all part of that restoring of our ancient culture, really. I think she's a huge part of that. And yes, I don't like to use, and at the same time, I do use this term because when I go into nature, I'm like, how can I be used as a vessel for, you know, your wisdom or whatever I might be talking to the plants. But so, yeah, she allows that to just pour through her. And it's so beautiful to be in the presence of. And yeah, it's breathtaking, really. Her voice and her music is really breathtaking. So that's why I chose that one.
There's a place where it all comes from. A time when we weren't so strong. Buried deep, buried deep inside, we keep our toes in.
Now I'm watching your fire is about to go out, so we only have a few more minutes. And but to use a term that we've been kind of using now to the rewilding, but you're pretty much swimming against the tide, aren't you? Like you as a group, in this, and I completely, I think it's fantastic what you do. It's fantastic the way you chose to leave, and we didn't even go into the forest school about your kids. I've had people in the past on the podcast talking about it, and I think it's a great alternative, but unfortunately it's still an alternative. And it's, and I don't know, what I'd love to know is outside of your circle, and I mean the circle, I mean the people that believe in what you guys are doing and they like to do, you know, the gathering, the circle, all of the wonderful things you're talking about, that world of the medical negligence solicitors, and there are still, and I know it quite well, and there are still burning out every second day. How do you deal with that, you know, meeting the old colleague, if it wasn't meeting an old colleague, or meeting an old friend that that hasn't made the leap of trying to get closer to ancestry or try to get closer to nature? And they say, seriously, what are you doing, Helen? You know, that's a hippie way of living, right? Which is sometimes it's the first reaction you get from people. Oh, that's a real hippie, you know, nonsense. Yeah. And I don't mean that's, I'm just, again, playing devil's advocate here. How do you deal with that? And how does that work?
Interesting question. Well, even though I'm talking about the severance of our connection to the land and all of that, for me in my own life, I haven't broken away from the people that I worked with. And I suppose it's like any relationship, isn't it? Like you can talk about it in terms of coming up to nettle and she stings you and you don't go back for more, or any relationship, intimate or otherwise, where you meet somebody and there's a bump in the road or an obstacle or something happens and you throw in the towel. And I think I've been with my partner for 23 years, and I just see that happening a lot in relationships where there is that bump in the road and then, or a difficult obstacle of some kind, and a difficult conversation has to happen, and then it's the end, and it's almost like a love bomb and then a ghosting or whatever the term might be, but it's disappear, vanish off the scene of in a relationship where something hard happens. And yeah, for me, it's something hard did happen. I couldn't sustain who I was in that environment. And so when you look back, it's like, wow, I studied and apprenticed for 8 years. Like I was in college for 8 years to qualify as solicitor. I worked so hard, and then I got into this privileged position, I suppose, in a top paying, biggest in Ireland corporate law firm. And yeah, the question to turn my back on that, and how do I reconcile with those people that I was in that world with, which are very much part of who I am as well. I mean, I would never go back into the law firm and be like, you really need to come to a circle, because I suppose I just wouldn't do that. You know, that's Yeah, it is a whole, it's a whole transition. And like I was talking about the transition and birth, it's like a part of me had to really expire, perish and die. And it's been a long journey of letting that go. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that I stopped taking on cases because I still enjoyed the journey into a medical negligence case. Like I still wanted to resolve it. I wanted somebody to get compensation or an apology or like justice. And all of that is a huge thing for me and always has been. And it's why I went into that in the first place. And the truth is that working, and it's like any midwife that works inside a hospital or has a very trying job and starts to question things and starts to question the system that they're in and whether they're actually heralding real change or not. And for me, despite the fact that huge money was being given over to victims, which was an initial kind of satisfactory state to witness, at the same time, I didn't feel like I was making any real change in the world in that space, in that arena. I was just fighting up against, to be honest, like a lot of corruption. And I mean, even some people approached me straight afterwards to be like, wow, will you do a podcast on what it's like to turn your back on that? And what was it like to be in the law firm? And can you tell us some of the truths about what goes on? And I remember at the time just being like, wow, no way. I can't talk about that. And funny now that I've rambled myself into this discussion, but yeah, what I saw and was party to is the honest truth was really disturbing and very like corrupted my soul on so many levels, if anything. And yet I know because of some of the cases that I ended up doing for, say, family members or people that are close to me, that there was definitely a reason and a purpose that I had to go down that road and learn what I learned in there. And would I love to bring some of those people along for the journey that I'm on now? Like, yes, definitely. And also, and this is just an honest recognition of this path, is that it's probably not for everyone. Like you say, it's not like, you know, it's probably not. And it's also just about meeting people where they're at, isn't it? And being able to be open and transparent about who you are and the person you've turned into and what your life is composed of now. And also just being compassionate and open to the choices that they're making. And if you're talking about burnout and things like that, that really breaks my heart to see, because I experienced that firsthand, you know, and how dysregulated and dysfunctional I became and how rapidly I turned to numbing and anything, any substance that I could use, like alcohol or anything, constantly to try and salvage myself from the wreckage of what I'd self-created, because I suppose that's what we're doing all the time, isn't it? I mean, we're making the choices in all the micro moments of how our lives play out. And that's what I was doing. And the grander idea of like, I'm going to save the world. I'm going to be this, you know, justice fighter who's going to just didn't really play out when I got into the nitty gritty of it. You know, if anything, it was just soul destroying to see where we are with that whole system. So it's like trying to change the system from inside the system wasn't something that I saw really happening at all. And although there's so many light workers and beautiful people in systems like hospitals and things like that, for me, I've removed myself from like the education system, the medical system, the corporate system. Like I've literally plucked myself up and like disheveled myself in the process and then just gone, wow. And I suppose what I was talking about earlier of like sitting on the land and being like, you belong, has been such a healing for me, because I didn't belong there. You know, I didn't belong there from the beginning. And it's not about fitting in. There's this whole, again, we're displaced with this idea that like, we don't fit in. It wasn't that I couldn't mask and mold myself to be in my stilettos with my pin skirt on and writing my notes. And I could easily play that role and at the same time cracking at the seams of the whole thing. So, yeah, wow. Thanks for asking me that, because I haven't gone down that one for a while.
So my last question is this, and then I'll let you go. Is so not all of us will get a chance to buy an old orphanage. Not all of us get a chance to live in a nice part of the world. And some of us live in a state where the trees are cut down as opposed to grown, right? That's what's happening. And the more trees are getting cut down, the more estates getting built, and all it goes with it. We call it progress. We call it whatever you like. However, and you mentioned earlier, the way, you know, you have to break up, you have to crack, to rebirth, to restart. And again, that's quite a dramatic, you know, element of all of this, but it's great that you've gone through that and it's working really well for you. But if you had that famous magic wand where you say, okay, I love for everybody, you know, for this world to be a little bit better than it is now, we're not going to change. It's not going to all be green. There's no chance. We're still going to have estates. We're still going to have skyscrapers and all of that. That's the reality. But what can we all do? What's the one thing we can all do to make this understanding of nature and, you know, lead a little bit kinder to nature than we are at the moment, because we're just not kind enough to nature, all of us. And I talk about all of us, because we all want the strawberries in January, and we all want, not all, but the majority of us want the strawberries in January, and we want the nettle tea produced in a box by some massive corporation. We don't like to go pick up our own nettles to make the tea. So what can we do?
Well, yeah, lovely way of putting it. And the thing I probably need to speak into first on you bringing that up is that I want convenience as well. I'm not proclaiming, and I don't think any of us need a guru or a shaman or a healer. Like we don't need that. And we do actually need convenience, and we do need things brought to us and handed to us to make life easier. And I'm all for that. And the one thing about it is I'd really love to eradicate guilt around that. And, you know, that nobody has to be this like perfect person who doesn't shop in the supermarket and who doesn't live in a high rise building. I think, yeah, compassion and non-guilt or judgment around that. And it's not that you have to live out on the land, on a huge piece of land to get into re-establishing the connections with nature. So it's just about forgiveness of humanity, I suppose, first of all, that, you know, we're all participants in the aliveness of the earth. You know, the earth is regulating us, whether we're in a high apartment or whether we're in a river. Like the earth is always co-regulating with us. And it really doesn't matter if we're buying our strawberries in January in a supermarket, that, you know, I think really forgiveness, if anybody feels that about the earth and about what's happening to the earth, is to know that. And there's, yeah, it came up at a recent gathering, actually, where we all went to this really sacred place, and or everything felt very alive. And there was, and it was just at a water place. And, you know, the immediate feeling when you land together in ceremony and you've driven together in ceremony, you've gone in a carpool where you really know the purpose of your going there and what might be broken open and what might be ready to die. And we got there and there was like rubbish everywhere and, you know, scraps of paper and plastic, and it was an undecided place. We were going to go somewhere else, and then we changed our mind and we went there. And what came up was like, now, after we'd had this magic ceremony, you know, where everyone was just elated and, yeah, not that that's always the intention, but it really was a very uplifting in bulk one. And yeah, at the end, somebody said something like, I think we should all pick up a piece of rubbish. And I was like, wow, you know, we actually can't do that. we can't come here for this sacred connection and also feel the responsibility that we need to pick up a piece of rubbish each. And obviously I really believe in not littering. I mean, it's an obvious one, but at the same time, this huge collective responsibility that's being put on us, and making us feel bad, I suppose, about ourselves, and just like increasing guilt and increasing separation. It's like we can't all, yeah, be in ceremony and then also be taking on the responsibility of picking up all the rubbish at the beach. And it's just, yeah, there's so much in what's happening around the guilt of not being super connected. And I hope, like, I hope I have spoken clearly enough around that. I mean, as you said, not everybody ends up here. And at the same time, it is our heritage to be that connected, and not that it's that connected, but, and I would come back and say, like, really what we're doing to women at birth, we're doing to the land and we're doing to ourselves. And I feel very strongly about birth for that reason, because, yeah, what's happening with birth and the increased rate of C-section and things like that, I think if, like, we're outsourcing pain, we're outsourcing death, we're outsourcing birth, we're asking somebody else to save us. And then this tiny little fragment of responsibility that we take for picking up rubbish is like a drop in the oceanic wave of, you know, what the real purpose of what it means to communicate with the plants. And then for people who are like, I'm not living in the country or whatever, I'm not living on the land, we can still retrace and go back to those potent childhood memories of, or along the line of, where during our childhood did we have something really sacred happening, or we were in this state of awe and it was disrupted by someone being like, oh yeah, that's just a worm, or that's whatever, or something where we felt like, I can't believe this caterpillar flies, you know, what, this caterpillar is going to fly. It's like we haven't yet become the butterfly or whatever, and it's this huge momentous thing for a child. And yeah, just to go back and see, like, where was that interrupted, maybe, or like look belittled or whatever, or looked down on, and then go back to that place and be like, I still have that, actually, that's still in me, like I still know that the caterpillar will fly. And yeah,
discover the wonder.
Yeah, so it's probably to go back to that as far back as you can go. Yeah, and also just start with forgiveness, because I just think the guilt that's kind of laden on everyone is not helpful at all. So yeah, forgiveness and going back to replaster over the places where that all might have been robbed or might have been torn down, you know.
Yeah, I like that. Thanks very much. The very last question, give me a book recommendation. What are you reading at the moment, or what would you recommend if I were to pick up one book tomorrow?
Oh, I've read some fantastic books lately. Are you talking fiction now or non-fiction?
Anything you like, anything that will get me through a couple of weeks of proper reading.
Well, can I ask you a question?
You can, yeah.
How do you, like, you are from Rome, yeah, and you've been living here a long time, so you're, you know, very familiar with the land and everything. And like, how do you feel Ireland has, or the land would have changed you? Like, it's being the land and you being on it.
Well, it's funny, because when you were talking about traveling and feeling the connection with the land, when I was asking about whether Tullamore or Antrim or whatever, west coast of Ireland, I have a deep connection with Ireland, with the land. And when I say the land, for me, is the woods, it's the sea, it's the nature. It's nature away from cars and tarmac. And I always recall spending about a month in New Zealand years ago. And I said, if there's somebody just decided to tell me today, that's where you're going to live for the rest of your life, I'll be okay with it. So I have a deep connection with it, very much like I had here. Like I have here, and the opposite happened when I was in Australia, that I had no interest in hanging around in Australia for much longer. So when you were talking, I can see exactly where you're coming from. And for me, just Ireland, it's just so easy to get around to the places, to get to places where where you can find that solace, where you can find whatever you're looking for. So just only a couple of days ago on Sunday, I went for a beautiful walk with Sylvia, my wife, and a friend, and a place I never knew existed, but it's only not far from where I am in Newtown and Kennedy. And there's a lovely fire road walk with different views of the same landscape that I know so well. So that change of perspective and different smells and a couple of different trees that I've never seen before. And I'm not very good at recognizing trees or knowing the names of them. But the wonder, which is what you're talking about, of I wonder what this tree is. I wonder why there's no leaves on this tree and there is on the one next to it. And that's what got me going for the hour, just talking about it. Well, I wonder what this tree is. And I still haven't found out what it is, but I will. And I'll go back there and maybe take a photograph of it and then maybe bring it back and look at a book and see, figure out what it is. And it doesn't matter what it is. All it matters is that it's a wonder. It's what that going back to not knowing anything and wanting to learn more. So that's the way I see the connection. And Ireland has, and you mentioned your friend Jenny Russell. There's a lot like music and spoken words and stories and storytelling. It's fabulous for that. You know, you do find yourself immersed in things. Like I don't speak Irish and I don't understand any of it, but I've been in many situations where I sat around with people, that's all they spoke, and it was fabulous to listen just the musicality of it all and trying to understand the sense of it. But that goes back to what I believe is that self-awareness that we can all practice on a daily basis, whether sitting beside a tree, touching the tree, smelling the tree, or simply just looking at the person next to you and just have a conversation, you know, be aware that there's a person beside you that might be feeling slightly different than you are, not better or worse, might feel different. And maybe it's a case of say, hello, and how are you? That could be as good as the tree. You know, that person might speak to you, and, you know, that connection with nature, with another human being, is still it's the same to me, you know. It's all of that is part of what we are and what we do.
That's so beautiful. That's exactly what I think as well, is that you just say hello to the tree, you know, or you just introduce your name. And I definitely agree that the names of the trees, I mean, maybe sometimes you're very called to find out what the exact name is, but often it really doesn't matter, and the names have changed over time the same way as the town names aren't what they once were, and some of them are still in Irish, and you know, they change. And so I feel that the personality of the tree is changing, so maybe that name isn't even appropriate anymore. But I do feel anybody that's on this land at this time is really meant to be here. And it's the same, you know, with Veronica, and I feel there's very sacred work that people that are called to be on the land are really undertaking, you know. And a lot of people have, Irish people included, have left. And I think if there's a deep call to be here, there's usually a profound reason, because I feel Ireland holds a lot of, I suppose you can call it codes, magic, you know. A lot pours through just by being on the land and going into the forest, and as you say, you're connected to the woods. And I just feel really strongly as well that the tree, like the forest, doesn't want us to go in and walk on eggshells and be real quiet. Like, it wants us to be our audacious, vibrant selves and to really announce ourselves and to be really awake and present in the forest. So I'm sure that's exactly what you're doing. You know, you're bringing your big, beautiful personality to the land, and it's so needed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So give me your book recommendation, then I'll let you go.
Oh, yes. That's why I was asking about the land, actually, because somebody that feels very connected as well, and he's dead now, but John Moriarty, he's written some fabulous books. I don't know if you know Dreamtime and... what else has he written? Dreamtime, Nostos, and A Hut by the Village. And another one that I read, he has such an ancient, he'd call the land the divine ground. And he his one love would have be, I think he very much came back to Christianity and Catholicism in the end of his life. But yeah, he is very connected to the lakes and Tork Mountain and the Paths of Danu. And he tells the stories in his own way, and he calls on a lot of mythological figures, but he really tells the story of the invocation of Ireland all across the nine waves and with the Fomorians. And he brings all of that story of how Ireland came to be. So it's really very ancient. I don't know where he channels it from, but he certainly calls on all of the mythological writers and speaks to a lot. So I'd highly recommend reading some John Moriarty. Oh, yes. And he speaks a lot to like the hawk and the bear. And okay. Yeah, it's very, very good stuff. Yeah, you must come to a circle. Yeah, that would be awesome.
I might do.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
You wouldn't know what messages you'd get.
You never know. I might get to talk to the trees.
Well, that's it.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Listen, Ellen, thanks a million for coming on the podcast. Yeah. I really appreciate it. We shall talk
Thank
to you.
Soon. Thank you so much.
And I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Ellen. Please subscribe, share, and rate us if you get a chance. It will really help our podcast, and it is much appreciated. Thank you. Waiting to shine, this friend of mine. Moonlight washed by a glass of red wine. I'm doing fine if you tell me why. Yeah, I'm doing okay. My new cover design, and we're happy and shining like a sunny day now. We left some dreams broken on the floor. Happy and shining like a sunny day. Never give up, just looking for more. Shining like a sunny day.